So we're in Marylebone, aren't we?
We're in Marylebone, yeah, it's very posh.
I really like Marylebone, it's very posh. Not always posh, it's posh now, but not always posh, I don't think. There was terrible slums. Octavia Hill, well, she became kind of joint founder of the National Trust, but also a campaign for social housing started in Marylebone,
okay.
I believe. It was a terrible slum. Not anymore, though.
Not anymore.
It's very flashy and very trendy.
Yeah, we're that sort of a hidden in plain view thing. We're a few minutes from Oxford Circus.
A beautiful Georgian village.
Quite so. Quite
Marylebone
so.
High Street, I think, was voted the street with the best character, Radio 4 listeners, this is, years ago. I mean, it is really stunning. I mean, the street we're particularly... we're in Manchester Square, right by the Wallace Collection, but we're looking down Hind Street, and then just on the other side of Hind Street, to the east, is a road called Bentinck Street. And, I mean, it's about 150 yards long. It's not very long, but the luminaries who have lived there and enjoyed staying there is long. I mean, so it makes one of my favourite streets in London.
Sure, and that's why we're here today. We're here to look at Bentinck Street. We're just taking a little shelter underneath a Manchester Square tree.
A light
dappling of London rain, yes.
Because it rarely rains in London, does
no,
it?
No, really. 1953, I think, was the last time.
We enjoyed summer this morning.
Yeah, we did.
But yeah, staff of people. So, who can we begin? Well, let's take it in chronological order.
Shall we take an amble along and see who we can see?
I mean, if you walk down Bentinck Street, Edward Gibbon.
Okay.
Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, this road was set out in 1765. He was here in the 1770s. So, 6 volumes. I mean, a life's work. I think he was got the idea in... he was in Rome. I think it was 1764. And then he started writing about 5 years later. And the first edition came out in 1776. And the final editions came out in 1788, I think it was. So this is a real, you know, life's work. He was, now I'm told at some point he was the, every now and again he was kind of tutored some of George III's children, and he presented his History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire to the Duke of Gloucester, who famously said, "Another thick, damn, square book, scribble, 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 eh?" So this is a life's work, 6 volumes. Been working on this for kind of, you know, the best part of 25 years or so. That was the response. That
well, you know, when you deal with the House of Hanover, you're dealing with a gene pool with only a shallow end there.
I love the Prince Regent. I always think of him as in Hugh Laurie in Blackadder.
Sure, Prinny in Blackadder, yes. Something of a buffoon, yes.
Something of a buffoon, yeah. He married Caroline Brunswick. I think it was 1795 or 96. The only problem was he'd already secretly married.
And it slipped his mind, had it?
Well, they managed to annul it because she was a Catholic woman. He had many, many mistresses. I mean, I think he made kind of Keith Richards look like Mary Poppins, you know, something like that. But eventually he was... he was in terrible debt, massive debt, to the tune of £630,000, which is, I think today, about 58 million quid's worth.
The proverbial pretty penny, yes.
And he agreed that they would probably, you know, they'd pay it off if he agreed to marry Caroline of Brunswick. And so when he met her, he was absolutely horrified. Apparently he said to
her... Either, she wasn't completely impressed either.
Well, it was a disaster. I mean, I think they did their duty. They had a child, and then they were just estranged. I mean, they separated almost immediately. But he got some of his debt paid off. And, at the coronation, when he became king, he literally locked her out of Westminster Abbey. You know about this? He literally locked her out of Westminster Abbey. And then he was told when Napoleon died in 1821, a courtier said, "Sir, your greatest enemy is dead." And he said, "Is she, by God?" Brilliant. I mean, I think when he died, he was 17 stone. He had a 52-inch waist. He was a massive, bloated...
Yeah, a real catch for Caroline of Brunswick, it sounds, yeah.
Anyway, back to Bentinck Street and back to Edward Gibbon. So he lived there. He lived at number 7.
Okay.
He described it as the best house in the world. He was shared it with his housekeeper, cook, 4 maids, a parrot and a dog.
My goodness.
Enjoyed it there. If you were to walk along there, you see another blue plaque for James Smithson, scientist. So he wrote the will for the foundation of the Smithsonian Institution.
Okay.
There. Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens.
We're seldom very far
18.
Away from Charles Dickens, are we?
So he was 1833-34, working as a parliamentary reporter. He first wrote, kicked off his publishing career, actually. He wrote A Dinner at Poplar Walk. for the monthly magazine. 9 pages, but obviously showed a bit of promise.
You'll go far that way.
And he did little theatricals there, wonderful little theatricals, which he'd press some family members into. And he kind of stage managed them. He would, you know, paint the scenery. He'd write the prologue. He'd play the accordion. I mean, all staged in the upper part, living with his family there in Bentinck Street, 1834.
He would write the theme tune, sing the theme tune.
Maybe turned out. But, So he was there for some time. Chopin.
Okay.
Polish composer. I think he was a very, very briefly. He was there very, very briefly indeed. Too expensive for him. And he moved to Mayfair.
Down market, slumming it in Mayfair. Now, if I remember correctly, he has a plaque in Mayfair as well, I believe. The house...
By St. James's.
Yes, he left that house to perform his last concert, if I remember correctly.
Quite ill, I think, wasn't he? Was he quite ill?
Yes, and, entirely opposite here, for the composer of The Death March.
Oh.
That was his last ever concert.
Right, okay. So, further down the road, this was number 5, Anthony Blunt and Guy Burgess.
Wow, okay, so now we're into Cambridge Spies.
Yeah. Lady Rothschild spent some time there.
Okay, so it was Blunt's premises, was it? Did he live there?
They shared a flat. They both shared a flat there together. Okay. 1960s, a bit later. Well, you might know this, John Dunbar, Magic Alex.
Okay, I'm going to jump on John Dunbar there. He was Marianne Faithfull's husband.
Right, okay.
John Dunbar. She left John Dunbar famously for one Michael Jagger, London School of Economics dropout.
Were they introduced in Wimpole Street? There was a party.
Andrew Luke Oldham, yes. Marianne Faithfull, born of, descended from nobility, faded grandeur, reared in Reading, of all places.
My home.
Your hometown, absolutely. Becomes a chanteuse, a pop star in the 1960s under the auspices of Andrew Luke Oldham, the Rolling Stones manager, famously entering into a relationship with Mick Jagger. Scandalous gossip column stuff in the 1960s. But Dunbar was one of the movers and shakers of that swinging
and
London
he
scene.
Introduced Magic Alex to Lennon.
Magic Alex is the fellow who was the electronics guru at Apple.
Yeah.
He promised them the moon and stars, and he was going to he made gadgets and gizmos that amused the perpetually stoned John Lennon, and he promised them a recording studio, but failed to deliver. 72 track recording studio.
Frames of the building, I think, didn't he, at Savile Row or something?
Yes, and that was the end of Magic Alex,
discreetly disappeared off the scene.
Yes, one of these sort of nebulous characters of swinging 60s,
Also, I think surrounding the area as well. I mean, it's a very, very short road, and if you turn left and then right, you'd be on Queen Anne Street. J.W. Turner lived there.
Okay.
And Wimpole Street, which you've already mentioned, but of course in the 60s... Paul McCartney and Jane Asher lived there.
Yeah.
Upper Wimpole Street, of course, Arthur Conan Doyle was there.
Okay, well, Conan Doyle references these streets, this area as well. Yeah. Doesn't Sherlock Holmes nearly get killed at the Welbeck Street crossing?
Yeah, Welbeck, named after Danny Welbeck, the Arsenal striker.
Of course, yes, the famous 18th century Arsenal striker, yes. Last time they won the league, the 18th century.
Yeah, he gets... it's the final problem, isn't it? The final problem.
Oh,
and he's... an attempt on his life, and he's nearly run over by a cabbie driver, which the evil Dr. Moriarty has set upon him, I'd imagine. And, on the corner of Welbeck and Bentinck Street again. So a lovely Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes reference there. Yeah, it's all going on. I mean, you know, Short Street, 150 yards and all that, 250 years of luminaries.
Quite so, and elegant as well. We have a pub on the corner there, but I know no Starbucks... no shops.
No, that pub, the Coachmakers, I think it's changed hands 3 or 4 times. I used to do a Marylebone pub walk, and just straight down there is Marylebone Lane, and that used to follow the trace, the River Tyburn, which the area is named after, Saint Mary Le Bourne, Marylebone.
Bourne, B-O-U-R-N-E, that's river.
Yeah, river, yeah.
Or waterway, would that be Saxon? Yeah. I was always interested in it because the old Scots word, or the Scots word for stream, is burn, B-U-R-N.
Okay.
So there's a common root there, I would think.
Yeah. Well, I think that from the 14th century, the village of Tyburn is where they set up a place of public execution right up until the end of the 18th century. And on what is today's Oxford Street, which used to be the Tyburn Road, Oxford Street is named after the Earl of Oxford, Edward Harley. You have Harley Street around the corner, known for private medicine, of course.
Yep.
And at the top of it, along that road was a church there in the 14th century. It was dedicated to St. John. And, you know, these kind of carnival-like atmosphere when these public executions would take place. The place was looted. It was pulled down. And they campaigned for a new church to be built a little bit north from there, dedicated to St. Mary on the banks of the River Tyburn. St. Mary-le-Bone, that's where the name comes from. When I say Marylebone, other people say Mary-le-Bone.
Marylebone for me. I've never known it as anything other than that.
Yeah. So, really, though, developed in the 18th century. So, Bentinck Street is named after William Bentinck, who was the second Duke of Portland.
Okay.
And today's heirs are the Howard de Wardens from famous aristocratic families. I mean, it's always been a part of London where, you know, famous designers and architects have lived as well. So people with great, exquisite tastes. Edward Luton.
Okay.
Cenotaph, I suppose, is the most famous thing. But also Alfred Waterhouse. Did the Natural History Museum, designed the Natural History Museum. We also have John Loughborough Pearson, famous for churches. But if you go on my hidden pub, it's all Two Temple Place, this beautiful building built for William Ward of Astor on the banks of the River Thames. He lived here as well. So it's always been a very, today, very flashy, very gentrified. It's been, you know, it's a very fashionable, very expensive,
sure,
very, very expensive part of London.